This is episode number 19 of the Golf Dash Show. Roy Palmer, skillfully learn how your brain body interact with the Alexander Technique.
Welcome to the Golf Dash Show, where we're dedicated to helping you play the golf of your dreams by providing cutting-edge information and actionable advice from world-class experts. And now your host, Doug Down the Fairway Ferrick.
Hey everyone, I think you're really going to enjoy today's guest. His name is Roy Palmer, and he is a world-renowned expert in the Alexander Technique. He is also a sports performance specialist and not only works with golfers, but many, many other athletes throughout the world. And for those of you who don't know what the Alexander Technique is, it's a remarkable, simple, but powerful method for learning to skillfully control how your brain and body interact, allowing you to better coordinate your movements while increasing the accuracy of your mind's thoughts and perceptions. Roy is also the author of a number of books, and one of them is called Golf Sense, and I highly recommend it. So without further ado, here's Roy. Hi, Roy. Welcome to the Golf Dash Show.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Doug.
Great. Usually, Roy, I like to get just a little bit of context on yourself and your background. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. As far as I can remember, I've always been interested in sport. I remember playing games in the back garden with my brother when I was 3 or 4. We went on to play football or soccer, as you know, cricket, martial arts, did quite a bit of athletics, and I'm now an action athletics coach. Following a lot of injuries I was suffering with the various sports I was doing, that's how I found myself getting involved in the Alexander Technique. And I had one session and was hooked, amazed at the difference that it made to, you know, how I viewed my own body and how I moved and how I did my various sports, that at the earliest opportunity I took redundancy, trained as a teacher myself, and I completed the 3-year course in 1998. And since then, I've taught people from many different sports, all levels of abilities, and I've worked on a few theories, developed some theories of my own, generally along the mind-body sort of side of it. And I've actually written 3 books to date about applying, you know, these methods to sport.
Excellent. We'll get into that a little bit later. But did you say you first came upon the technique in terms of you had an injury? Was that accurate?
Yeah, I was suffering. I was very much into karate at the time. I was doing a lot of karate and running as well. But I was persistently suffering from lower back pain and neck pain. And it was in my early to mid-20s that I first came across the Alexander Technique.
Now, not many people know about this, as you probably know, in terms of sport or certainly in terms of golf. So give us sort of a bird's eye view of the Alexander Technique and how you define it.
Yeah, I mean, there are many different definitions. You will come across different ideas of what's actually the technique is about. But I see it as a very practical method that helps you to improve your awareness of your movement. But also, I mean, we talk about mental and physical side, but I feel the Alexander Technique, we don't really separate the two, because without the mind, you don't have the body and vice versa. So it's a very practical way of learning how to observe, how to prepare, and how to carry out specific movements. It works for people in different ways. But a lesson, it's usually on a one-to-one basis, although you can learn it as a part of a group, but involves the teacher guiding you through, with light touch, a series of movements whilst you focus on particular aspects of that movement, maybe what you're doing with your jaw, your neck, or your shoulders. And then with repetition, you can become more aware of the things you may be doing that you would previously been completely unaware of, as I found out, that can be making the movements harder than they should be, less efficient, and therefore that can lead to overuse injuries or poor movement. But it also has the benefit of teaching you to be much more focused, much more aware in the activities that you do. And actually, I find golfers make very good pupils, because golfers have spent an age standing over the ball, focusing on, you know, one sort of particular action that they have to carry out. And it's like golfers and horse riders, I find, make very good pupils.
Interesting. So I mean, some of these techniques, I think when you first, like I know in some of the books, certainly that I've read in yours as well, I mean, you can start, I mean, do you typically start off with, I mean, because there's exercises you can do by just sitting, like from a sitting position to standing. I mean, do you start that basic or do you, like, how would you look at like a golfer in particular? Like, say they came to you and like, I don't really know what's going on with my swing. You know, there's some things happening that I don't, I mean, how would that initial conversation go?
Normally I was, would ask them to name one thing that you're particularly struggling with. And quite often they might be there because they're having problems with their back. And obviously that's going to interfere with your play, or they feel they're just not able to hit the ball as far as they want to be able to hit it. And so, quite often just starting with the simple everyday activity that everybody does, i.e. getting up from a chair. And I use that as an example of what's going to come next, because the majority of people, when they move to get up from a chair, will do a number of things that really aren't necessary. They may pull the head back, lift the shoulders, push the chest forward, tighten, you know, their lower back. And they will do all of these activities or all of these actions to perform an activity most of us do 50 times a day, but they are completely unaware that they are doing them until you bring them to their attention. And then when you point out how that is interfering with their movement, then it's a little bit of a light bulb moment. And so if you say, well, if you're getting out of a chair doing these things you're not aware of, then how can you be sure that everything you think you are doing standing over the ball, you know, are you aware of all these various actions that you may be bringing to your technique that you're totally unaware of, and do they help? And so quite often, if you can get somebody to move up from a chair in the right way without doing any unnecessary preparation, the movement feels smoother, it feels lighter, and you get the idea that you're using a lot less effort. And so by taking them through that sort of movement before we've even picked up a golf club, it's just trying to give that experience of a different type of movement with less effort by just focusing on a few small things. And then the idea is hopefully they think, well, if I can do this getting out of a chair, well, what difference could it make when I've got the club in my hand?
Yeah, that was sort of like a light bulb moment for me as well. I'm going like this, it sounds so simple, but it's really kind of like revolutionary, like on another level too. So it's pretty cool. But talk to us about now, we're kind of veering into like habits a little bit and like how, you know, obviously, you know, when we're getting set up to the ball and going through our pre-shot routine, you know, I mean, pros may be a little bit different, but, you know, AMs, you know, typically don't have a, you know, an overly maybe refined process in terms of that. So talk to us about how we can better understand our habits so we can kind of improve on that level.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the first thing I ask people to do is try a very simple experiment of just to fold your arms and then to look down and see which way are you folding your arms, which hand is tucked in and which is sticking out. And then you say to that person, now just fold them the other way. And it's surprising, and I remember struggling with this, it's surprising how many of us can't actually do it straight away.
I love that one. Yeah. I was just reading about that one the other night.
We will have to look. We will have to think. It's the same you can do with clasping the hands, you know, which thumb is on top, then reverse the clasp. And the funny thing is, most people look at it suddenly in an odd way. Well, that feels completely wrong. And so the problem is, habits feel very right. We are comfortable with them. They're very familiar. The feedback we get from our joints and muscles is all very familiar. When we do it a different way, sort of fold the arms the opposite way, we have to stop and think about it. And when we do get there, it feels wrong. And so the problem with habits is that, especially if you have a particular routine for getting ready to play, to swing or to play or play the putt, I always think of it like a chain of events. We don't tend to start the movement until we've set up the very first link in that chain that feels right. So, for instance, many golfers, I'll see them just tighten their jaw a fraction or just wiggle their head or wiggle their hips. And so the problem is, as soon as you put that first link of the chain in place, everything else will follow along. And the thing is, it will feel completely right. You'll feel quite happy. This feels great. But the problem is with that habit is it actually takes away much of the awareness and observation. Because if it all feels normal and familiar, we won't think of changing anything. And so habits do tend to lock us in to the inevitable outcome. And so, say for a golfer who, is maybe suffering from lower back pain, part of his preparation is probably to tighten his lower back. And he will continue to do that because it feels right. Even maybe at an intellectual level, he may understand that is not going to help. It won't help with his movement. It's going to cause problems with the muscles eventually. But of course, once we've put that first link in the chain in place, it all flows through. And the problem is the outcome is normally the same, quite often not one we want.
So I guess in some ways it sounds like we're sort of deconstructing our consciousness, if that's kind of a highfalutin way, I guess, of saying it a little bit. But we're really trying to bring the unconscious to sort of a conscious level in some ways.
It is, yeah, because as I say, with the habitual movements and the well rehearsed movements, and many times they are fine. You know, we've practiced it enough. Although I always bear in mind the saying, "Practice makes permanent, not necessarily perfect." But yes, it's trying to break down the events without thinking of the end. What you're trying to gain at the end of it. Because as soon as we think, I've got to hit this ball, we will set those chain of events in place. In athletics, they call it the kinetic chain, things that have to happen at a certain time. But actually, funny enough, I was in preparation for this, I was just reading through some of the things I use when I research for my book. And one of my favorite quotes is by Ben Hogan. And he says, if you reverse every natural instinct and do the opposite of what you were inclined to do, and you will probably come very close to having a perfect golf swing. So he sort of sums it up in a sentence. I love that. When I was researching, I thought, aha, I had these ideas from an Alexander point of view, but to see somebody like with the likes of Ben Hogan to say this, he's obviously experienced that. And I know golfers can get so frustrated because they have a particular problem and they try really hard to correct that. But the problem is the harder they start trying, the more likely they are to put that very first link in the chain in place, or quite often look too far down the line. Or they think, oh, it may be my grip, or it may be, my stance. But the trouble is, to correct that, you've got to go right back to the very start, or before you even start that movement, to change what's going to come down. So to deconstruct, as you said, to bring it to a conscious level. But then conversely, and perhaps we'll get onto this a little later, conversely, don't make it too conscious that you start to try too hard, because then you find yourself back in the wrong place.
It's sort of a fine line in some ways as well.
It is, definitely. It's a subtle line to walk between trying to do something and then trying to get out of the way of it.
So do you have an example, Roy, of just maybe a client or someone you've worked with recently or in the past, and how have they transformed from when you began to work with them? I mean, could it be just an immediate thing? Does it take time? How does that work, and what was the end result?
Sometimes it can be instant. And it always still surprises me, even though I've been teaching for 18 years. I still get a thrill from seeing an instant result from making such a tiny, subtle change. I'll give you an example. A golfer, he'd been playing for about 12 years. Generally, his short game was good, but he always felt he should be able to hit.
Was this an amateur, professional?
Amateur.
Okay.
And he was quite a well-built chap, had all the right attributes, long arms, long legs, all the levers were there, if you like.
Right.
But we just went out onto the range, and I said, well, just do a few swings and we'll have a look. And I always start at the top and work my way down. So I will look at the jaw, look at the neck and the balance of the head. And so I cover this in detail in my book about the influence of the position of your head, the impact that has on your coordination and your balance mechanisms. But what this chap was doing, he just clenched his jaw. As he clenched his jaw, he tightened his grip on the club. And actually, I see this quite a lot. And so as soon as he clenched that jaw, he would obviously then be tightening his neck, stiffen the shoulders a fraction, And it's a bit like putting on the brake before you're trying to drive away. He put on the brake and then tried to swing and hit the ball as hard as he could. So with him, I just said, just what you're doing with your jaw. And I actually got him to let his mouth drop open. Just to start with, again, remember what the habit experiment with folding your arms or clasping your hands. So I got him to drop it open to make it feel completely.
So you're sort of breaking that chain a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's to prevent that first link in the habitual chain from kicking in and carrying him through to the inevitable outcome that he doesn't want. And so I got him to keep his jaw open and to play the shot. And just by doing that simple thing, it changed the whole feel of it. And actually, he hit the ball just about as far as he normally would, even though it felt completely wrong to him to play that shot. And he said, this doesn't feel right. So I said, good, I don't want it to feel right for you. So next, I got him to close his mouth, but to keep a gap between his teeth, because obviously you can't be walking around the golf course swallowing flies with your mouth wide open. That's not going to help. So I just got him to be aware of the contact his lips were making with each other whilst keeping his jaw relaxed and keeping a soft face. I don't do karate anymore, but many years ago, we'd get the Japanese instructors coming over to England and taking sessions with us. And they were forever saying to us, soft face, soft face. I didn't really understand at the time. But of course, we were standing there gritting our teeth and throwing the kitchen sink at all of our punches and movements. Whereas if you sparred with some of these Japanese, you could look at them across, you know, the arena from you, and they would have a completely relaxed face, which A, meant you couldn't see what was coming because there was no sign of any preparation they were about to attack. But also, what I now appreciate, it means it keeps the tension out of your face, your neck and your shoulders, which means you are better poised to move. So once this chap closed his mouth a little, just was aware of the contact of his lips, and to keep this soft face and not to try to hit the ball hard, he swung so much more freely, and he added about 8 yards to his shot there and then. And of course, with a little bit of practice, that became part of his preparation. Obviously, he'd already lined up his shot and knew what he was doing, but just that one small thing. And so you do sometimes see an instant result, which is great, because yeah, immediately you reinforce that sort of the feedback loop, i.e. I do this one thing and this thing happens. So the, you know, sort of cause and cause and effect is seen instantly.
I was just going to say, you know, it's almost in some ways, it's not surprising that you see that because we're so unconscious about these like habits that we have that it's like, oh, I didn't know I was doing that. I just do it, you know? So it's like, oh, that's interesting. And, you know, obviously you can't see it for yourself. I mean, someone really, you know, it's obviously of a much greater benefit to have, you know, someone watching you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a cruel trick of nature habit, because we are the last people to be aware of it. You know, our spouses will say, oh, you always do that. And you think, do I? And, you know, they will pick something up that you don't see for yourself.
Sure.
And it's that sort of awareness that, yes, you need somebody else to look. I mean, actually, you can find out things for yourself. So you can sort of have a few little, if you like, a little mental tick list that you can go through. So there, it is possible, but of course you've got to know what you're doing first.
Sure.
Alexander, one of his best quotes was, you can't stop doing things that you don't know you're doing. And so you may focus on one thing, like you might, as I said earlier, you might think your grip's not right, or you've not got your hips in the right position. But if that's further down that chain of events, then it doesn't matter what you try to do with your hands, you aren't going to change it because it's something earlier on that's leading to that. And because the moment you come to swing, that's when you're going to revert to what feels right, especially if you're in, you know, in a game that has some importance on it. I've worked with a few pros over the years. And it can be harder for them because although they have obviously the skill level, they are as good as they are because they are consistent. And that's the one thing that frustrates so many, you know, amateurs, well, even pros, is the inconsistency. You know, how can I play one shot so well? You know, I think I use the example, but you play, you know, two sublime shots to get onto the green and then miss the simplest of putts. That's one of the frustrations, but also the beauty of the game. It's the inconsistency, the unpredictability of it. But with a pro, it's different for them when they're practicing. But of course, again, when you're in a game that makes where it's really important and has a lot riding on it, it's very hard to do something that doesn't feel right. But again, that's the challenge, if you like,
sure,
to each one of us. It's at that moment when it really counts.
So,
can we let it happen?
Yeah. So we were discussing before about, you know, that's sort of the fine line between, you know, doing too much and kind of doing less of that in terms of just allowing it to happen. Now, when you allow something to happen, that's when I think we begin to talk about getting into the zone. Talk to us a little bit about how we can get into that state, perhaps more often.
I mean, this has been a subject that's fascinated me for years, the zone, or I work with a lot of actors and performing arts people now, and they call it the flow. But it's that state where whatever you do, and we've all experienced it at some point, it can be away from the golf course, in any sort of aspect of our lives, when everything we do just seems to, you know, you can play with ease, it feels natural, it feels effortless, and yet you're playing some of your best shots. We can interfere with that by thinking, well, great, I must be in the zone. And sometimes that awareness that we're in the zone can take us straight out of it. So getting into it, the best way I can try to describe it is comparing it to trying to get to sleep. You know, if we go to bed at night, you don't get to sleep by trying to close your eyes shut tight and lying in bed thinking, I must sleep. You're interfering with a natural process. Most kids have experienced this on Christmas Eve. You know, go to bed,
sure,
you want to get to sleep because you can't wait for Christmas. And it yeah, doesn't happen. To get to sleep, you need a dark room, you need to be warm, you need to be comfortable, and your mind needs to be at ease. Anything that interferes with that is not going to help. And getting into the zone, I find it helps to be in the moment. So you hear terms about being in the moment. It's a very Zen sort of approach. And I see the two things as different. Being in the moment is the first state of it, to get yourself fully focused and aware. But with, it's not a concentration, because if you concentrate, you narrow your awareness on one specific thing. It's opening up your awareness. So simple little things. I'll say to a golfer, maybe start from the floor. Be aware of your toes in your socks. Is there a little bit of movement in your ankles? Can you feel your ribs moving or the air flowing in and out of the out of your nose? Be aware of the touch of your clothes on your skin. And then take it more into golf. You know, like be aware of your hands on the handle. So it's focusing on these things without concentrating on. You're aware of them. You're aware there are messages that you're receiving, and it's got to be relevant to what you're doing. So you can't suddenly become aware of, oh, well, if I sink this putt, I'm going to beat the boss, because that's actually further down the line. That's taking you out of the moment to something that's going to happen. It's not, it's got to be what's happening now. Now, if you have any anxiety of the outcome of what you're about to do, that is going to keep you out of the moment. So it's almost like I couldn't care less about what's going to happen. And I often ask this question to people in any sport or in any sort of whatever they're doing, is if you want to try harder, what do you think you're actually doing? And for most of us, trying harder normally means furrowing our brow, tightening our neck and shoulders, focusing on something. And again, focus means to narrow your awareness down to one specific thing. Whereas if you keep that awareness open, staying in the moment, and again, trying not to care about the outcome of your shot. One golfer I worked with, he said what was liberating for him was this idea of being in the moment. So he said, I've chosen my club, I've lined up the shot, and now I'm over the ball. I don't have to think about those things. He's already done that. He's made his preparation. So all I have to think about is staying relaxed and just letting the club do what I want it to do. And so it's just trying to focus on the one specific thing. And you can't think too far down the line, because again, that drags you out of the moment. And quite often, you know, it's, if you can stay in the moment and not care about the outcome and let the, you know, your movement flow, then more often than not, you will find that hopefully you'll get the outcome closer to what you were aiming at.
Yeah, I think it's really that thinking that, you know, especially if, you know, maybe the hole before you had, you know, a bad shot or you shanked it, you know, who knows what happened. I mean, you could hit it into the woods, but it's like, oh, now I did this, now I, you know, get yourself back to the moment and just try. Because once you do that, you can kind of release that tension too that you have in your mind and possibly therefore body.
It's what they call, isn't it, releasing a bad play.
Sure.
Put it behind you. It's happened. Whatever you're doing now isn't going to change what just happened. But if you're still thinking on that, it certainly will change what's going to happen.
Yeah, next. Hey, it's easy for us to say, right, Roy?
it's chopping yourself up. One of the things I've got into recent years is the javelin. My daughter is actually a very good javelin thrower, and she got me into it. And I have to, I can't throw my daughter's 15 and she can still throw further than I can as much as I try. And I have to put this into perspective. If I try to throw that javelin hard, I completely ruin the technique. And actually I can throw better if I'm just doing a standing throw, because as soon as I add too much to it, then I start to struggle. And plus the fact, I mean, I'm 51 now. I've had 30 odd years of bowling a cricket ball patterned in. And the two are not compatible. And so it's interesting trying to take out any thought of trying to throw the javelin any distance and try and stay relaxed and let it flow. And it's great to take it into something new. You know, I said, anybody try completely new. And this is where we quite often see this beginner's luck thing.
Of course.
When I was 15, my brother and I, we were on holiday and we had a go at pitch and putt. And I hadn't, I probably held a golf club once on a crazy golf course or mini golf. But I, on the very first hole, it must have been about, I don't know, 40 yards. It wasn't too far. But I got a hole in one on the very first hole. And I thought, hey, this is easy. But then once I'd got that, I thought, oh, I'll have a go at this. And the more I tried, the worse I got. And my brother actually got a hole in one on the last hole. But it's quite often this beginner's luck is where we are not bringing anything to the game. But as soon as we start to care about it or think that, oh, I need to focus on this, whereas maybe before it was just totally natural. I'd played many other sports, so maybe that had played a role in the judgment side of it and the swinging of the golf club. But as I said, it's that sort of as soon as we try to attach importance to it, we start to try and think about getting it right.
No,
remember that thing about clasping the hands. That feels right. My habit feels right.
No, it's totally true. And I'm about the same age. I'm 52. So it's sort of a curse in some ways to get older when you think about the fact. I often go like, man, it just sometimes I feel like I get caught up in my own sophistication about things. So if you can sort of drop that stuff, you know, like you just mentioned, like I'm trying to throw it. Well, why are you trying so hard? Why don't you just throw it? Why don't you just be it?
I always remember something. My the head of training where I trained at my Alexander course, a chap called Ray Evans, he always said, this work is too important to be taken seriously.
Beautiful.
And I always remember that because you think, when we say we're trying hard or I'm going to be serious about this, what are we actually doing? We're tensing up. We are bringing too much to it. And again, quite often it's the people who play with the wild abandon. I always think many top sports people are very zen-like when they're interviewed. You know, they've gone through this process. They've learned things. They've been there, seen it. They've done it. And you can see it in so many sports, you know, the likes of Roger Federer, Thierry Henry. I don't know how many of your listeners would know, you know, the French footballer. Mind you, the French tend to be like that in general, don't they? There are many French sports people who are very zen-like in their approach. But I think it's that process of learning to do something, observing, learning to do it well, and repeating that process. And I always think top people are the people at the top of their sport because they are consistent. They've learned how to reproduce that time after time and do learn in the process that they've got to get out of the way once they've got that going. And you see it in many performing artists. They can sometimes get to their career where suddenly they start to get stage fright where they'd never had it before, because suddenly it's this, well, crikey, I'm, you know, well into my career. I'm a top this or top that. And maybe they're suddenly bringing something to it that they don't need to bring. And it that sort of natural ability they had when younger can suddenly go. And so it is. It's something we have to be wary of, and yet never to take ourselves seriously. As they say, never believe what they write about you, the hype.
Exactly. I remember one quote, which Bruce Sammartin quote that I heard from Johnny Miller, like, if you're over a putt, it's just like, you know, you want to make more putts, just pretend you're 12 again. And I often do that. I go like, it's just a ball in a hole. I mean, you know, it's really quite simple. Why am I bringing all this stuff? But again, that's the challenge to us. You know, in the work that you do and, you know, the people that play, it's sort of, you know, trying to release some of that stuff.
But the odd thing is that we defend it like mad when people say, it's just a game.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but there's a football manager over here, Bill Shankly, that said, oh, no, it's not a matter of life and death. It's more important than that.
Okay. That's funny. That's good. So tell me a little bit about, and I often think about this too, and maybe it'll trigger something different for you than it does for me, Roy. But, I mean, how do we begin to become more effortless and more effortless and less effortful? Are there some things we can do? You know, I want to leave our listeners with some things they can do as well.
Well, I often say to people, the more you try to do, the more you can get wrong. So the more you bring to your technique, and I mean, I've stood on ranges where I've heard somebody being coached where they've given them 10 things to think about. And you cannot do that. You cannot think of even maybe 3 things at once. And I'm guilty of this sometimes. I think I've given them too much to think about.
I've heard all the good coaches say that too. That's and I'm hearing that more and more, like simple, simple, simple.
It is. And in athletics, you say you give them one thing to think about. You don't worry what else happens. You ask them to try to be aware of one thing, then ask them, did you do that one thing? And then it's to build it up from there. But it's so easy to suddenly see something else, think, ah, and as you're doing that, try and think this. So keep it simple. So say on the range, next time you're on the range, think to yourself, okay, I'm going to take a swing at this, but I'm not concerned about how far I'm going to hit it. Try and give yourself the objective that for this swing, I'm going to do it as free and easy as I can. I'm going to try and stay relaxed. So we talked about softening the jaw. If you can soften the jaw, try and think of that running straight the way down through your neck, shoulders, and right the way down to your back. Try and stay nice and springy in your legs. But it's just to keep relaxed and not care how far you hit it. Almost think of doing it with as little effort as possible. But obviously, you've got to move. So it's let the club do the work. You've just got to get it back up in position. And if you can stay nice and relaxed to bring it up, it'll flow back easier. And so it's that process. Try that once. Don't be too concerned about how far it goes. But again, quite often, people can be surprised at just how far they have hit it, doing as little as possible. And so then you say, okay, let's try that again. We'll add just a tad more speed to it, but let's focus on that face, jaw, and neck. And as soon as you feel you're adding something, like you're just even raising the eyebrows, that's quite a common habit. See people raise their eyebrows as they're about to swing. Even if it's that, stop and see if you don't let that happen and then carry on with the stroke. And so bit by bit, you can start to appreciate anything that you're adding and then start to look at how far the ball's going. Are you adding anything extra? Then it may feel like more effort. You may think you've hit it harder, but in fact, what you're feeling is resistance to movement. Because if the coordination isn't there, some muscles are working against others. They're not relaxing when others when they should be, and others are then you're in a tug of war situation. So just try and think of that. Do less with it. See where it goes, and keep playing with that. Try it a little bit quicker. But as soon as you see you're doing something to interfere with your neck, face, or shoulders, stop and try again. And so again, it's trying to get that instant feedback. You feel you've done something or not done something. And then you see what the outcome is.
Yeah, I see this a lot, and I'm sure you do too, with people who really try and like hit the ball. I mean, they have the hit-itis where it's like, I've got to do something. And it's like, it's so odd because this year for me in particular, it was like, you know, I'm just trying to swing as freely as possible. And I mean, it's just amazing when that happens. Obviously, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's like you don't have to do a lot. And it's such a counterintuitive sort of mentality that I think this Alexander technique really kind of brings that out.
I mean, yeah, that's it exactly. It is. It sounds counterintuitive not to try, but again, if you say to people, "What is it you are doing when you are trying?" You are putting more unnecessary effort into it. It's like, you know, you see people do a lovely sort of practice swing, and you think that looks good, and they step up to the ball, and you just don't see the same stroke, because as soon as you bring the ball into the equation,
exactly.
It's gone. When you say about the hitters, it's interesting.
What do you tell those people? What would you say to them?
Right. Well, when they've done their practice swing and they step up to the ball.
Well, you know, yeah, because that happens to me too. Like, it's a nice, smooth practice swing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, there's the ball. There it is. Yeah. What do I do?
It's to step forward and just maintain that awareness of all of those physical things. And right. Again, you've done everything you've needed to do. You've lined it up. You've got the club you've chosen in your hand. You've done everything except just follow through. So, you know, to swing the club. And so it is trying to swing the club a couple of times, just step forward and don't even think about it. Actually, if you ask, if you get people to look on YouTube, and if you just search Fred Astaire golf swing, I don't know what film it is, but there's a little routine he does with a golf club in his hand. And there's something like six balls lined up, and he's doing a little dance routine, and then he just dances down across all of these balls, and he just hits them one after another. And you see, there's no preparation in that. And actually, most of them look pretty reasonable shots, because there was a man who was poised.
Sure.
And so again, it's this. Sometimes maybe just step up and hit it straight away. Don't step up and then spend the next minute thinking about the shot. If you've done your practice swing, step up and swing straight away. Again, try these things in a game that doesn't matter.
Sure.
But I say, just maybe step up and swing it. And again, it's this thing about, right, okay, I've done all that. Now I've got to do this right. Get that out of your mind, because it's not going to help.
What's a recent aha moment or insight you've had recently that has you particularly excited?
Oh, right. Yes. It's just mentioned a little earlier, it's overthinking. It's very popular in athletics now. And I was on a training course, as I'm doing my coaching badges. And they talk now about overthinking. It's where you interfere too much. And it's interesting. I mean, I've been teaching Alexander for 18 years. And to get people to focus on certain things like I've mentioned. And I thought, actually, I still find at times that I'm overthinking or I'm overcoaching. Again, asking people to think and do too much. And this overthinking, okay, if you've patterned in a particular movement, so whether it's the golf swing or throwing a javelin, you know, or, you know, hitting a cricket ball, if you've done that if you've done that movement many, many times, yes, there is a pattern there. But if you start thinking about it too much or focusing on too many things, then you start to overthink, and it's like putting a stick in the spokes of your wheels. You can completely interfere. It becomes counterproductive to try to focus on your technique. I mean, you think the first person that hit a ball with something that resembled a golf club, he didn't have any manuals, he didn't have any idea what was involved, but most of it must have been fairly intuitive. You know, he soon worked out that you were better in a slight crouch to hit a ball, that to stay relaxed, you know, that many sports have their origins that, you know, somebody had to hit the ball for the first time. And so there is, I still, you know, think there's an intuitive part of us. You know, we start walking. We start walking by watching somebody do it. We don't read a manual about it. There are many activities that we can do pretty well, actually, without too much coaching. And so all of the movements that are involved, you know, for instance, a golf swing, it's part of a jigsaw. There's little bits and pieces that have to be put together. But intuitively, I think most of us can figure out that, yes, there's a certain thing I have to do with this club to get the ball to where I want it to go. Whereas as soon as we start to think, you know, the rotation or the technical aspects of it, and as I said, there are so many books written on the golf swing because, you know, it is a complex movement, but ultimately it comes back to it's a very simple movement.
It is. I keep saying that to people. Yeah, yeah, it's a swinging motion. I mean, you know, it's a very simple motion,
A few years ago, I was knocking down an old brick-built shed in my garden, and I had a 7-pound lump hammer. And it was a very well-built sort of construction, and I was really swinging this hammer to try and knock this wall down. And I suddenly thought to myself, actually, it'll be a lot easier if I relax with this. I've got 7 pounds of weight on the end of a long handle, which probably with the momentum increases dramatically. I don't need to try to hit this brick wall hard. If I stay relaxed and swing, it's going to knock it down. And you think of like a big, you know, demolition ball on the end of a chain. They don't have to wind it up and swing it. They just let it go.
Nice.
And so again, it's this thing of, keep it simple. Who was it said, keep it simple, stupid, wasn't it? You know, and really that's the best advice.
Great, great. So we're getting towards the end of our time here, but I want to make sure that people can contact you, get your book. Tell us how we can do that, how we can contact you, get your book, work with you, et cetera.
Right. Yeah, I'm currently moving my sort of website onto a new platform. So okay. I'm hoping to have that in the new year. But people can email
me. I'll put that in the show notes.
It's Roy at... Yeah, that's the Art of Performance one, the one that you've emailed me on. That's the best email to get me on because I do check that on a regular basis. The book, Golf Sense, you can order it through shops. Some of them may have it on the shelf already, but you can certainly order it through shops. It's available in Kindle formats or, you know, any smartphone or e-reader format. You can get it from, and paperback, get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, and actually just about every online bookstore.
One quick thing about the book. We did do a review on it on our blog, on Golf-Blog, so take a look at that. It's really one of the best books that I've read just because it opened up my mind so much. I mean, there's no fluff in this book. I mean, you think that it's like, oh, Golf Sense, whatever, but it's really, really a terrific book, and it follows this golfer like through the book. I thought that was there's so much good stuff in this book, so please get the book.
Well, thanks for that, Doug. Yeah, actually, as for the title, whatever I write, I'm having a fiction now. I always struggle with titles. That's the hardest part.
I think we all do.
I mean, I also teach individuals and groups. I do sessions at golf clubs, actually mainly in England. I mean, I'm based, you know, in the sort of home counties. So most of the work I do is like within a 50-mile radius of around London or, you know, sort of a little further into the Midlands. But anybody who wants to experience the Alexanderstone, you can go to any teacher. It doesn't matter if they are a teacher that is more experienced with music, musicians or with actors, or with people with back pain. They don't have to be an expert in golf to show you some basic techniques that you can try out that'll change how you move and how you focus. So, I mean, I work with players from sports, some of them I hadn't even heard of, or I work with even skydivers, things I've never had any experience of, but it all boils down to some basics as far as movements are concerned.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
And, I mean, you can go to the very good website, alexandertechnique.com. It's a chap called Robert Rickover, a very extensive website. It's got all sorts of things about the technique, but he's also got a register of teachers worldwide. And, you know, but certainly in the States as well, you know, you'll find a teacher hopefully within driving distance of you.
Sure.
Depends how far you're prepared to drive. But, yeah, it doesn't have to be somebody who's experienced with even sport to give you an experience of the technique.
Exactly. Well, Roy, I just want to thank you very much. It's certainly been enlightening for me, and I'm sure it will be for our listeners as well.
Well, that's great. And again, thanks very much for the opportunity, Doug.
Sure. Cheers.
Cheers, then.